When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
But just like everything else that's put on this earth, we were planted here to grow. When we're not growing and exploring, we feel like we are starting to die. And people talk about languishing as if they feel like they're dying inside.
On this episode of the Psychology Podcast, I had a very important chat with Corey Keyes. Corey is a well-respected sociologist and psychologist who is a legend in the field of positive psychology. Corey is especially well known for his idea called languishing. To languish is to lose or to never have had a lot of the good things in life that make our lives matter and make it meaningful. This is why people who are languishing sometimes describe themselves as dead or dying inside. Languishing creeps in after a period of extreme stress, grief, isolation, discrimination, trauma, moral injury, or demoralization. A sense of low-grade mental weariness that can be easy to dismiss, especially since indifference is one of its symptoms. If you stay in the state of languishing too long, it will put you at risk for a whole host of problems, not the least of which is depression. Thankfully, Corey offers us some guidance on what we can do if we're languishing to feel alive again in a world that wears us down, including the 5 psychological vitamins. This is a really important discussion, and I hope it can help you increase your own sense of aliveness. So without further ado, I bring you Corey Keyes. Corey Keyes. Wow. So glad to have you on the Psychology Podcast.
It's good to be here, Scott.
I'm a longtime admirer of your work. You know, I teach this course, The Science of Living Well, at Barnard College, Columbia University. And I start off my introductory lecture with your mental health continuum. It's a really good way of introducing students to positive psychology and kind of a different way of thinking about mental illness and mental health. So thank you so much for the amazing work that you do for our field.
Thank you.
Yeah. And congratulations on your new book. I'm glad that you wrote this book. It's very much needed right now in the world. I think that a lot of people are feeling that sense of what you call languishing.
Yes, I never imagined it would take a pandemic to raise the awareness of my work, because I'd always thought maybe I would be approaching this and my book about it around flourishing. But it's a good lesson. We have to meet people where they're at. And my research has always been about trying to use the positive to deal with some serious forms of human suffering in the world that we're not dealing with very well.
No, we're not.
Well, I'm thinking about various inroads into the languishing construct, and I thought we could start off with discussing the idea of the mental health continuum. I think that's a really good way of framing a lot of this. You have this very provocative quote in your book. You say, mental illness and mental health are correlated, but only modestly. What? First of all, that sounds like a lot of scientific jargon, but also that's for those who know, they know that's pretty interesting finding.
Yes. It would be safe to say there is quite a body of evidence now that supports what I'm calling the two continuum model. And before me, people did talk about this to continue a model, but didn't do any of the empirical science. And strangely enough, as I write about in the book, I always do a deep dive into history before I move forward to know where philosophers and thinkers have been on this topic. And it turns out the ancient Greeks in the origin story of medicine proposed the to continue a model. Right. Asclepius, the myth of Asclepius, the father of medicine, had two daughters, one of which was named Panacea. And you know Panacea from our current medical healthcare system, which is about fixing illness. But he also had a daughter named Hygieia. And Hygieia was about a healthcare approach that dealt with maintaining the presence of good health and dealing with its losses. And so this idea has been around for a very long time. And I always appreciate the fact that when I'm working on something that, you know, it's dealing with something that has been with humanity for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, ain't that the truth. But can you explain a little bit to people what that means, that they're only modestly correlated? You know, you can have any configuration, right? You can be high mental illness and high mental health at the same time.
Yes. And at first, when I proposed this model, that was the category, the combination that really jarred people. It was hard for them to hold both of those ideas together. How could somebody be mentally healthy? Because right, I use the word flourishing as a stand-in to indicate the presence of good mental health, and be mentally ill at the same time. And it's not surprising to me, because I talk about my own mental disorders. And when I'm in recovery, and when I'm doing well on the mental health continuum and flourishing, my mental illness recedes into the background and it's well managed. So most of us with mental illness aren't symptomatic 24/7. That doesn't mean the mental illness has gone away. It's there. It's affecting us. But as it recedes into the background, and I think often it does recede in the background because we're really starting to live a life where we're getting those ingredients of flourishing. And so I talk about even a study in Hong Kong of schizophrenia, people with schizophrenia. And 28% of them at the beginning of the study were diagnosed as flourishing on my measure. And yet they had schizophrenia. It was being managed. But you know, it's everywhere that people can flourish with a mental illness as long as it's being well managed.
Mm. You know, you remind me of a famous study that I talk a lot about, a study of creative people that Frank X. Barron initiated in the 60s. And I believe he did some work in the 70s as well. They took an old fraternity house, renovated fraternity house, and they brought some of the greatest thinkers and creators of the day, I think like Truman Capote, they brought in to study, and they studied these creative people. And he has Frank Barron has this great quote, which I'm trying to remember the exact words, but something like the creative person is both sane and mad, you know, at the same time. What he found is that these creators scored sky high on almost all the measures of mental illness that he could throw at them. And they also scored sky high on almost every measure of mental health and what he called ego strength, ego strength, mm-hmm. which is basically resiliency. Yeah. So that was a major finding from the Frank Baron studies on creativity. And so I just wanted to kind of integrate that literature into what you're talking about.
Yes, I think it's a brilliant connection. And what I like to think about it is that we coexist in both worlds, all of us. Some of us sky high, as you talk about it, but some of us to lesser degrees with some symptoms of mental illness and some symptoms of flourishing. And I think that's just human nature. That's how we are composed. And this two continuum model, Scott, I review a lot of evidence. It's the way our brain is designed as well, because sadness and happiness have some things overlapping when it comes to their activation and deactivation cortically, but they have a lot that's not in common, right? So just because you're sad doesn't mean you can't be happy. And that's what we call bittersweet moments. You can be both happy and sad, and they can coexist. And Susan Cain just wrote a book about bittersweet. And yeah, right? I mean, it's
I wrote her bittersweet scale. Actually, the scale that she uses, I wrote that scientifically with David Yeadon.
Oh, you did? Yes. It's amazing. And then to finish up this topic that you raised, it's even at the genetic level, the dual continuum exists. And I've done studies there. And let me step back, because the first thing we found was that flourishing was just as heritable as things like depression and anxiety, literally 60 to 72%. You know, those numbers, they're kind of hold them loosely, but it suggests that there's a high genetic component. And that the three kinds of well-being that I use to measure flourishing, the emotional, psychological, social, all come from a common source of genetics. They don't come from a different genes, so to speak, which is validation that they sort of represent an overall construct called mental health. But here's the kicker. The genetic variants overlapped less than 50%. And what that means is you can inherit a high genetic risk for depression, but it doesn't mean you didn't also inherit a high genetic potential to flourish. And by the same token, you may not have inherited any genetic risk for depression, but the absence of genetic risk doesn't mean you inherited high genetic potential to flourish. So it's just remarkable to me that this two continuum model then has huge implications, because it suggests even if we were to cure mental illness tomorrow, it doesn't mean we have solved all the problems, because if you just leave people languishing, you've just pushed them into a different category of suffering that's nearly as bad, and sometimes just as bad as things like depression.
Yeah, it is profound. I think that it's good to talk about the different points on the continuum. Languishing is just one point. It's also possible to flourish, right?
Yes. And
is it possible? Have you met anyone?
Yes. And it's remarkable that there's the variation. And in the Healthy Mind study, which was an ongoing study, and again, cross-sectional every year of an array of college campuses. Early on, it used my measure, and it was remarkable. There was a huge variation from 40 up to 60% of students flourishing. But again, even in the best scenario, the highest levels we could find on college campuses was 60%. But it also got quite low. And we see this also by country. Canada has been using my measure in the public health assessment or surveillance, and over 70% of Canadians met the criteria for flourishing, which is the highest I've seen internationally, because some estimates suggest other countries have no more than 30 to 40% flourishing. So they're out there, Scott. There are mentally healthy people out there. But what's remarkable to me is that we've been assuming that if you're free of mental illness, everyone's mentally healthy, and that's simply not true.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I think it'd be good to define what these different points in the continuum mean, though. So, okay, what is languishing? You know, that could have been my first question I asked you. But let's not bury the lead too deep into this episode.
Well, everyone's been describing it. They're trying to find a word that just captures it. And some people want to use the word blah. And that may be true. And Adam Grant, I know Adam, and Adam used the word meh. And both of those, I don't think do it justice because
quite capture it, yeah.
Right, because I think some people might come away from that thinking, well, that's you're languishing because you're bored, or you're languishing because it's rained 3 days in a row and it's been cloudy. No. So let's put some meat on this. To languish, you have to have at least 7 out of the 14 signs of flourishing absent. Right. So there are 7 out of the 14 questions. You have to say that you're not experiencing these things very much. Things like purpose, things like belonging. You don't have a sense that you're contributing anything of worth and value to the world. You don't like most parts of your personality. You don't have warm, trusting relationships. You're not confident to think and express your ideas and opinions. And on top of that, you might not feel very happy or satisfied or interested in life. So it's a constellation of at least 7 or more things where you're deficient in what makes life really quite meaningful. So to languish is not just to be blah. No, you're not functioning well, and you're not feeling good at all about your life. You're essentially running on empty.
Is this kind of like a scale of aliveness, like kind of feelings of aliveness?
And
how you define aliveness?
Yes. Well, it's remarkable. My subtitle is "How to Feel Alive Again." How to feel alive again in a world that wears us down. I think I think to answer your question, yes, you could think of it flourishing as coming to life. And in a draft of the book, and I don't think this survived, but I was using the analogy that humans are just like everything else that's put on this earth. We were planted here to grow, right? To grow and to explore. And when we're not growing and exploring, we feel like we are starting to die. And people talk about languishing as if they feel like they're dying inside.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. And when you're flourishing, you do feel alive. And you can see it. You can see it because there's a story of Scott in my book, and he's a prison guard in Australia. And he went from feeling very dead inside to feeling very alive, and it was very contagious. He became a new form of a positive virus that infected everyone else around him. It's like when you're flourishing, you can't keep it to yourself. You want to share it. And without even trying, you share this kind of zest and aliveness with the rest of the people around you.
It makes complete sense. And what I really want to do the rest of this episode, now that we've laid that out there, is to know what the heck to do about it. I have a couple criticisms of positive psychology, but one criticism I have of it is that a lot of it's very circular. And what I mean about that is that you'll see people say things like, to flourish, you need the perma. you need these 5 things: positive emotions, purpose, relationships. And if you don't have them, you're not flourishing. Now, how does that help someone who doesn't have them? How does it help someone to just go to the person and say, well, the reason why you're not flourishing is because you don't have these things. Yeah, the person knows they don't have those things. Okay.
Right,
they
right.
could have told you they don't have those things.
I know.
So that's what I mean by a lot of it is very circular. It's saying, well, in order to do it, you need to have it. But it's, you know, it's so I really would love to really discuss practical, tangible things and go beyond just saying, you know, you're languishing because you're not flourishing. It's like, okay, yeah. Can we just keep it real for a second?
Let's right. keep it real. I agree with you. And I have spent a lot of time out of the limelight, so to speak, because I did not want to publish anything unless I had a very good body of scientific evidence. And I came across some research, and it's called the Tuesday in the Life of Flourishers study by Lana Catalino. And yeah, and every Tuesday she called up these adults and asked them what activities they engaged in the prior day. So this was about your Monday. And she asked them also a variety of adjectives that describe having a good day. Did you feel proud, serene, content, joy, grateful, and so forth? And what she found was there are five activities that flourishers did more of than those who were languishing or depressed in her study. But hold on, I'm going to get to the languishing and depressed. So that's what I call the five vitamins. So flourishing people engaged in more helping behavior. So if they were going to go do something about helping someone, they did more of it that day. You don't have to do all five of these every day. But if you do one of them, do enough of it, right? It's not like a 10-minute exercise. So they helped others. They learned, something new and focused on personal growth. Third, they engaged in some form of what I'm calling transcendence, some spiritual or religious activity. Fourth, they played. And fifth, they socialized, but they socialized and prioritized the kind quality relationships where there's warmth and trust, where there's belonging, and where there is giving and getting. And so those five activities, remarkably, if you were languishing or depressed and did more of one of those five activities that Monday, you had a way better day than anybody else who did nothing. That includes flourishers, because some days people who are flourishing did none of those five things and they had as bad a day as those who were depressed or languishing who did nothing. But if you were depressed and languishing and did more of those activities, you had a better day. And over time, longitudinally, they began to move. Now, slowly, they didn't jump from severe languishing all the way up to flourishing in a month. But every week, she would find them having better days. And as they had better days, they were more motivated to do more of those five things. It was kind of like a virtuous cycle. So those five vitamins, and then I talk about a few other studies that show the benefits of moving in the direction of flourishing. But I'm trying to meet people where they're at. And I loved that study because it showed that small steps. And I talk about my own experiences in therapy being told to start small, Corey. I don't know if you remember that section, but they told me meditate 1 minute. And I laughed. My ego was like, oh, my God, no. And no, I had to start with 1 minute. Small, small, small. And so,
yeah, it is amazing how much big changes can happen just by like we think we're like depressed, but maybe some days like we just haven't eaten yet.
Yeah,
and then just, we eat and so we feel better and we're like, oh, that's all I needed to do.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I'm not trying to be Pollyannish in this book, and I'm not trying to be rah-rah. And I'm also not recommending that you can sit on your couch and meditate or practice gratitude and you will function better in the world. Because here's the thing that people are missing. It's not, languishing isn't happening because people aren't feeling good. There are a lot of people who would meet the criteria for flourishing if it only was about emotional well-being. But they're not functioning well. Their lives don't have enough purpose, belonging, contribution, autonomy, growth, and acceptance, and all those other good things. And you're not going to get those functioning well qualities without going out and doing something, engaging, because those vitamins are about doing something good for yourself. But when you're doing those things, you're also often doing good things for other people and with people.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/psychpodcast today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/psychpodcast.
Absolutely. How would you describe the relationship between the five vitamins of flourishing and the six domains of human excellence? Do you map them onto each other? Like, what's the relationship between them? And let's talk about what the six domains of human excellence are as well.
Well, yeah, I was trying to boil down the qualities of flourishing into six domains of excellence. And to tell you the truth, that may not be as helpful to people as if, right, I tried to steer away from thinking I had the answer to the ultimate qualities of life. I don't. I humbly submit to you a concept called flourishing and languishing, and the questions that go into it come from a deeply rooted theoretical notion in psychology and sociology of what would it look like if human beings were doing well in life, beyond just feeling good. So whether it's the six domains of excellence, I really, really, those questions are, there's something about those questions that get at something that is deeply important. Because I can't tell you a study, Scott, where I've found that flourishers aren't doing better than everyone else.
Yeah. It's tough because, as you describe, it's possible to be flourishing and also to suffer with a mental illness, you know? And so that concept can be hard for people to recognize, you know, and to understand. And I think that's a big theme of today's episode, is kind of the complexity of being human, you know?
Yeah, that's why in the book, in my work, comes from a deep lived experience with a lot of adversity and suffering.
Do you mind talking a little bit more about that with me?
Sure, because for the first 11 years of my childhood, there was just, I never felt safe in my home, and for good reason. And I never talked when I was in my home. Never talked. I learned to dissociate and disappear. That was the all I had, because nobody was there to protect me. But when someone realized that, and that's a story in and to itself, but my grandparents pulled me and my sister out of there. And at the age of 12, I was suddenly in a very different environment with love, warmth, safety, nurturing. And suddenly I went from being in detention literally every day and D grades to honor roll every semester, participating in choir, in sports, the school quarterback. I was doing just really well. And suddenly all that bad stuff was gone. Yeah. So the bad stuff was absent. But when I sort of let my guard down and I was done with the day, I write about this at the very beginning of the book, how it started for me. Suddenly this emptiness would creep in. So I was free of all the negative, and I was experiencing what I would later describe as a flourishing life, but I was experiencing languishing a lot as well. Right? As a young person, I was experiencing it. I didn't have that word, but when I heard Jackson Browne's album and song called The Pretender and Running on Empty, I heard somebody who understood what I was experiencing, that emptiness. That sense that you were invisible and you were disappearing, and no matter how things got, how much goodness was in your life, there was something missing. And so I tasted flourishing and I tasted languishing. And my grandparents, of course, when they adopted us, they were in retirement. And they died shortly after I was married. My grandmother died. My grandfather died shortly after I was adopted, about a second year we were there. And then my grandmother died within 3 months after I was married in 1986. And I was just finishing college. And flourishing came from this notion of trying to figure out what I had experienced in that household with my grandparents, which was something very good. I had tasted something I would later call flourishing. And it was really helping me move away from that emptiness. But I had a long journey ahead of me. And suffice it to say, to end this story, is it's been a lifelong journey working through the trauma and the mental illness. But I had to face those things. I couldn't run from them. I thought I could create distance. And every time I looked in my rearview mirror, they were right behind me. And so flourishing is what I created to feel at home in this world. When I'm flourishing, I feel at home. We earlier described it as feeling alive, but I think also for me, it always reminds me that I belong. I belong here. And I feel at home. And that's why I also call it my North Star. And I hope other people use that imagery, that it's the image of what's going to guide you to a place where you too can feel at home.
Absolutely. I really love this notion of just feeling like you belong to yourself, you know, because there's so much discussion about this kind of, I really need to belong to a group, you know, in order to matter. But, you know, I think that if you matter yourself, it doesn't matter what other people, what validation you get from others.
No, and it is. Yeah. You're talking about belonging and the combination of purpose, right? Where there is something. I just felt alive and at home when I realized that I had something to give to the world. And I think we all have something to give. And I want people to realize when they're flourishing that they, regardless of whatever stories that they don't want to talk about, they don't, right? But if they're able to work through those stories that they usually want to hide, I truly believe we're all gifts. I just believe that we have the gift to give of ourself. And that is the most precious thing I've experienced in this life, where others have given me the gift of themselves. Because after my grandparents passed, I had nobody. And so I had to create and find people who were like my synthetic family. I call it, in the book, The Wall of Love, in that email to my professor from my undergraduate years, we're still in contact. And those people gave me the gift of themselves. And it made a huge difference.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm not sure we actually listed the six domains of human excellence, though. We can't just assume that our audience knows everything. Let me read the list.
Yes.
Acceptance.
Yes.
Autonomy. Connection. Let's teach some things here, Professor. The six domains of human excellence are acceptance, autonomy, connection, competence, mastery, and mattering. Now, this is my question I'm trying to wrap my head around. Would you say that if you are cooking on all cylinders on all these six domains, that you're flourishing? How does it map on to the five vitamins of flourishing? Learning, connection, transcendence, help, helping others, and play. Because play is not in one of the domains of human excellence.
No, but autonomy, the ability to determine your own what you want to do, what brings you joy, right? And what you consider useful, and rather than somebody else telling you from the workaday world, telling you how you're useful. Autonomy is a spark that's represented in almost every vitamin. The ability to decide to become a better person for other people. Autonomy is sort of the foundation. But I mean, I could say that of every domain, because I talk a lot about how acceptance, especially in the spiritual / religious vitamin, how that's one of the many ways that spirituality and religion, when they're doing the job of helping us become better people, they don't always do that. But when they're doing their job, they're helping us to understand that acceptance is at the heart of dealing with things we want to push away, right? The pain and the suffering, the loss and death and all those things. and even our own imperfections and the other's imperfections. And I found in my own journey, I found acceptance to be a hard one because, oh boy, and I'm still working on that. So when I understand that I'm only in charge of my own thoughts, feelings, and behavior, and not anyone else's, the world generally works far better, even when things aren't going well for me, because then I understand that I have to take responsibility and change something about me if I want something else to change in the world. But that's the direction you have to go rather than the other way, demanding that the world change before I start acting.
I completely agree.
Right. So those are hard lessons, Scott. Those are really hard things. So all of them, like mattering, oh boy, is that sense that you have something to give to the world. Oh, I've been on the opposite end of that where I felt like there was no use for me. Oh goodness. I write about that. And about it's happened. When other people started writing books about flourishing, I was about to sit down and write my own book. And then when it came out ahead, I thought, well, I'm not needed here anymore. And I write about the fact that sense that I didn't belong and I had nothing to give anymore, was, I almost let that convince me that suicide was the answer. Oh my gosh, yes. If my wife, and I write about this in the book, hadn't come home early, I drank myself into oblivion to hang myself. And she got there and I was sitting in the dark and she was like, what's going on, Corey? To jump to the bottom line, she said four words that I will never forget. And these are the most powerful words anyone can hear. But I need you. But I need you. And I was like, okay. Well, I'm going to have to work on some things. And I'm going to have to take a semester off at least. And it's not going to be once a week for an hour therapy. This is good. I had to go into intensive inpatient and learn about myself. And that's when I experienced cognitive behavioral therapy very intimately and had to deal with all these distortions that were in my mind from my trauma. And now I have a user's manual. And I'm prepared for when they come along and I can talk back to them and not let them trigger me. But that was a moment where I came very close. That's how powerful that idea of mattering and belonging is, because I write about this in the section where a purpose, when you have a purpose, it can also be lost. Right. So finding your purpose doesn't mean it's guaranteed it's going to stay there, because I experienced firsthand that I thought somebody had taken my purpose from me. And that what came from a cognitive distortion. And so those journeys of dealing with these six domains of excellence are deeply personal. And I think of them as ways of, the first thing you have to deal with is how those things, the absence of those domains, are really holding you back, how they're triggering and making you vulnerable first. And then you can get to the part where you start to bring them into your life, because doing it the other way, trying to bring them into your life without dealing with the triggers and the vulnerability, will continue to derail you. So I had to stop and deal with the triggers and the vulnerability where I was missing, and where the absence of those domains of excellence, where they came from, and to understand that.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, thanks for being so vulnerable and sharing your own personal struggles with us. I'm sure it'll inspire a lot of people listening to this episode. I'd like to really zoom in on the definition of these five vitamins of flourishing real quick. I didn't want to go through this so we don't get some of the most essential information lost at all. So the learn one is about creating stories of self-growth, following your curiosity to learn something new. Connection is building warm and trusting relationships. Transcendence, you call it transcend, which is the title of my book, Transcend, the New Science of Self-Actualization.
Oh, I did not. Oh, cool.
Did you know that?
I did not know that, Scott. Thank you.
But I love that. That was probably my favorite part of your book. Help finding your purpose, even in the mundane. And I want to circle back to that in a second.
Sure.
And then play, which is the fifth vitamin of flourishing, which is I'm conflicted whether or not my favorite is transcend or play, but it's probably play. I love playing. Stepping out of time, making time for activities where you enjoy the process, not the outcome. I want to circle back to the help one. I think that a lot of times when we talk about purpose, we can kind of feel like it's this, you know, like we're a loser if we don't have this big, humongous, you know, calling in life. And I like to, you know, a lot of my students, right, like they're like 19 years old and they're like, I'm a loser because I don't have a big calling yet. It's like, calm down. Isn't it possible to satisfy this need for help just through small actions? You know, for instance, I feel better. I'll tell you a little about myself. Well, if I'm feeling down, I like to just go to a coffee shop and I like to just be nice to people. And I feel better. I just smile. And let's say I smile, you know, at someone in a warm, caring way, and they smile back, and you're like, you know, that was putting a positive vibration in the universe. That, you know, that you know, I matter for even those small vibrations. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
Yes, and I think we overcomplicate purpose, and we give people, if they're not solving some world problem, that can't be a purpose. And I think it stops us before we've even started. So I've always recommended keep it small, keep it local, so that you can keep it focal, right? Start small, keep it local, so you can stay focused. Because do what's really within your reach, literally and figuratively, and that's right around you, in your small little community or in your neighborhood or your school. You are doing something amazing by simply helping people who you may see quite regularly in town, rather than trying to solve, say, the crisis in Syria and the people who have been displaced. I saw that on the news this week, and I'm like, my heart went out, and I was like, God, I wish I could solve that problem. And then I was like, I can't. That's not something for me. I know it requires a big system. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. But the other thing about purpose is I don't think we should be pushing people to move in that direction unless their heart is ready to say yes to that first question that I ask in that chapter, which is, do you want to help somebody or something else? You don't always want to. So if that's the case and you've got other things you need to be doing, well, don't be sitting there trying to say you want your purpose, but you're not going to go find it. Because Michael Steger and others have shown that the process of searching can be pretty detrimental to your well-being. So if you're going to keep that open, go do something about it rather than, right, just say, I'll get to it and keep it in my mind, but I'm not going to do anything about it right away. So I talk about making a plan for young people. It's enough to have a plan for your purpose, and that can come later.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, well, the play, that, which brings us to play. Yeah. It's the play is planless.
Yes. And well, that's
intrinsically enjoyable.
Yes. And the point is, we have gotten so immersed in a world where we think of our time in terms of an economic commodity. Time is money to most people. And there's been research on this. When you get people to think of their time as money, they're less likely to go help others. And they're less likely to think play is useful. The worst mindset for play is to think it's a waste of time. Of course, and yet, you know, we needed studies on that. Of course, it's a horrible mindset to say, I'm wasting my time when even if you're having fun, what a waste of time. What a way to dampen the benefits. And yet, the point here is simply do things because they bring you joy. And more often than not, we play not alone, but we do these things often with others. And so what's amazing about the vitamins, Scott, is when you start to really think about practical examples, they start to bleed into each other. You start playing and engaging in some forms of leisure. You're often affirming warm, trusting relationships and building community and belongingness. Yeah, it's like, it's amazing to me that happens in spirituality too. My own example is I've practiced yoga for 25 years. In my yoga community, you don't do yoga alone, or some people might, but I love the fact that you go to the studio and you do an hour and a half work with these people that you talk with before and you talk with after, and it's often the same people, and you create this wonderful community and sense of belonging. And yet you're also practicing and working on that spiritual muscle. Because all of these things are skills. All of life is a skill. And if you don't practice it, you won't be ready. And I talk about how religion is just a rehearsal. Prayer and spirituality are all rehearsals to get you ready when the game is on. When something comes into your life that says you can be a better angel or you can be a darker version of yourself. You have a choice here, right?
Wow. Wow. That hit Corey. Wow.
So these vitamins are, I balked at using that word, but I know it made sense to use it.
I did brain vitamins.
Yes. Well,
off a brain.
Yes. And here's the thing. Languishing feels sometimes a lot like anemia.
Yeah.
And I thought it made sense after my talking to some of my agent and others saying, I think the vitamins is a great way to think about this because you're nourishing, you're putting into your body something that nourishes your mind and your soul.
You're a deep human, Corey. You're deep. I want to read a quote. I actually want to read a few quotes, but one quote you said, good mental health is not a null category. It is filled with ingredients of flourishing, purpose in life, belonging, contribution to society, acceptance of others, acceptance of others, warm and trusting relationships, autonomy, personal growth, and more. Flourishing is filled with the things that make life worth living, that bring quality to whatever quantity of life we are granted. I mean, it's pretty deep. So there are a couple points there. One is that we're talking more than just feelings of happiness. Good mental health is more than just momentary feelings of just feeling happy. And then another point, not so much a point, but can you leave our audience with another tangible thing to improve that? Again, I don't want people to just be left with like, okay, I'm lacking it, so what I need to do is have it. You know,
no,
tell
no.
people how to have it. Tell people how to have it.
Yeah. Well, it is a journey. I write about mine has been a very long and difficult one. And that doesn't mean that yours has to be, but I bet some of my readers will be able to resonate with that. And I still taste the noonday demon of languishing some days and many days, but I know when it's coming. I can feel it. I used to not. It's kind of like a fog. You don't know it's coming, engulfing you. But now I'm aware of it. But it took a long time and a lot of work to get there. And I hope I made that clear in the book that this is not a simple one and done thing. This is a lifelong process and commitment, but it is your North Star. And if the ingredients of flourishing aren't sufficient to motivate you, then I there's nothing I can say or do, because don't tell me that I should want it more than you want it, because I can't do that for you. You're going to have to do it for you. But trust me, I have to trust in yourself as well, that moving in that direction, doing a little of each of those five vitamins, is about bringing life back where you felt dead and not alive. And it's not about taking 10 minutes out of a schedule and a life that you're not willing to change. I don't even go there. I don't say you could do this in 10 minutes and not change anything about your life. You're going to probably have to add and subtract a few things. Like, you can't just help. I mean, your example is great, Scott, about going to the coffee shop when you need a jolt. But I mean, the study showed that
a social jolt.
Yeah, you're going to need to do a little more on many of those days to help others. And that requires either engaging in a commitment to be a volunteer at least once a week or doing, right? But you will experience better days. And those better days are what's going to reinforce. Yeah. You won't get to flourishing overnight. You won't. And I didn't either.
But I think there's a deeper point. There's even a deeper point there that you just made than flourishing is not a state, a final state. Can't you have a day where you feel dead inside and then can't you flourish the next day?
Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
And then the next day after that, can you feel dead inside again?
Yes, there are.
See, that's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering. It's not like, I don't know, these people who are like, I'm flourishing, you know, like as though, I mean, they're annoying. Those people, because there, it's not, am I right? It's not a final state of destination. It's a direction, not a destination.
It is. I'm constantly going home. I'm coming home. I'm always coming home. And you do that literally and figuratively. You have to leave home sometimes to do, come home. It's a normal reaction. Languishing is a normal reaction to a lot of life's adversity. Now, the only problem is if you stay there too long, just like if you stay in sadness or fear too long, they become mental illnesses. If you languish too long, you get stuck there. It becomes, and I show you, there's evidence, it becomes it's a dangerous thing. Some people start thinking about ending their life like I did, right? But it's a normal reaction. So don't be overwhelmed or think that you've lost everything, because the next day you have an opportunity to say, this is my life and this is what I'm going to believe in. This is my purpose. This is how I belong. This is... where I'm going, how I accept myself, this is how I accept others. And that's what I'm going to live for.
Love it. This is wonderful. I just want to give people hope where the flourishing person models just feel so out of reach for some people. And that's what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah.
And so thanks for this dialogue. You know, you get it. You get it.
Yes. And the other thing to remind people, because I think when people hear the word, they think flourishing is like another form of enticing people into perfection and success. You do not need to have all 14 signs. You only have 7 out of the 14. Half. And there's, think of all the permutations, because there's 11 signs of functioning well. You only need 6 out of the 11 combined with 1 of the 3 feeling good. It's not Superman or Superwoman work you need to accomplish. It's not that at all. It's well within all of our reach. And you get to choose what are the dimensions of functioning well that you want to privilege and work on. Is it a sense of belonging? Is that absent? Well, go for it. But flourishing isn't perfection. It's not all 14 signs. It's 7 out of the 14.
Love it. Let me end here with the notion of building a community of flourishers.
Yeah.
How can we contribute to building such a world?
Well, by admitting that very little of anything any of us have accomplished was done alone. We academics have a bad habit of portraying to the world that somehow everything we've done is done with, it just came fiat out of me. No, I relied and studied and benefited from other people in multiple ways. And the spiritual path reminded me also, nobody does it without a community that's invested in the same things. So as I could imagine a family saying, I want to bring more of those 5 vitamins into all of our lives, and we're going to do this as a family. Can you imagine? As a work team, I could imagine people saying, I want to do more of these 5 vitamins and find ways to bring them into our daily, our weekly life. In a religious community, I could see people getting together to practice these in their spirituality, in their religious traditions. But here's the thing. I know for a fact that I couldn't have done this alone. I needed a community and people who gave me the gift of themselves and caring about the things, not just that I cared about, but caring about me and my well-being. And in turn, my research has been all about caring about your well-being and giving whatever gift I have to give. And this is it. This is my life's work. I hate, and I'm not, it's not hyperbole. I waited 25 years to do the science, to write this book. I was not going to write it until I felt like there was something there that was more than just talk. There was a body of scientific evidence. And that is the greatest gift any scholar can give.
You know, this book is very, very important, and I'm really, really glad you wrote it. But I want you also to know something. You know, you don't know the extent to which your work has ripple effects. You're not aware of it. You think that you need to write this big book to matter. As I said in the beginning of this interview, you know, like when I teach my course, and I've been teaching for years, you know, I start off my and frame the whole, you know, course through your mental health continuum model. Your work has profoundly impacted me and the work I do and the way that I inspire students and you know, every cohort of students I inspire through your work. So the book is kind of gravy, really, when you think it's the thing you waited 25 years for. You're probably not fully aware of how much you've influenced people in the field. So
no, I'm not. And that's I've kept a low profile because I'm a worker at heart, and I love what I get to do, and I think it's a privilege to be able to teach and be a scholar. I did retire early.
I agree.
Right? I retire early because I think my next step in life is to try to become a more active advocate for mental illness and languishing and try to get healthcare systems to change in this direction, because I don't think we're going to deal with the crisis of mental illness with the way we've been trying to deal with it, which is treatment alone. So I appreciate what you just said, Scott, and it does warm my heart. I haven't paid attention to that stuff because I've always been looking, there's more work to be done.
Always. Yeah.
And there always will be.
But that also doesn't mean the work that has been done, you know, like you're allowed to savor it sometimes.
Yes.
You're allowed something to bask.
Exactly. Bask. No. It's a good point because it's something I'm working on to take it in and savor sometimes. I don't do that. And I'm human. Hardly perfect. Nowhere close to it. And that's the point. I love the way Brené Brown talks about that. We're all imperfect, but we're wired to struggle. And because we're imperfect and we struggle, we're worthy of love and belonging. I will never forget the first time I heard it because that made me cry.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's the point. And I'm still working on those imperfections.
Well, thank you, Corey, so much for bringing your full humanity to the podcast and for your work, and all the best with the book.
Congrats. Thank you very much, Scott, and thanks for having me.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life.
transform the world.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.